Hey, this is Pearls and Swine. I'm Levi, Nate is next to me, and Travis is across from me. And today we are talking about hope. Easter has happened, folks. Hopefully you made it out to one of the services in one of our local churches and were able to experience the risen Christ, the living hope. One of the things that I often find interesting in the story is Jesus goes to the cross. They see him die. He's put into a tomb. He appears to Mary, who's coming to put some spices on him. She goes out to tell the disciples. The disciples don't believe her. Jesus shows up in the house. He doesn't like Kool-Aid man it or anything. He just like comes in and appears to them. He doesn't like rip through the wall. That's what I mean by that.
Yeah, that image like burned into my head as soon as you said it.
He just appears and they're like, holy smokes, Jesus is alive. He's resurrected. They're pretty excited. But there's one of the disciples that's not there. His name is Thomas. His nickname is Didymus, also known as Twin, which is a very weird thing. Like, what's the other twin's nickname? I don't know. Anyway, we also know him as
Doubting Thomas.
And he doesn't believe this thing, even though his comrades, his buddies say, hey, Jesus is alive. These are his trusted bros telling him, hey, Jesus, he's alive. And he does not trust him. He says, hey, I will not trust him unless I can stick my hand in his side. I can see the wounds on his hands. And you find this story in John chapter 20. And it's just this really fascinating story where a week later, they're all meeting together again, all the disciples, including Thomas. And Thomas he's there, and all of a sudden Jesus appears to him, and he says, go ahead, Thomas, here's my side. You can stick my hand in there if you want to. And what I find interesting about that story is not that Jesus told him to do that, or Thomas got kind of what he needed, but rather that Jesus already knew it. He wasn't there in the conversation in a visible sense, but he already knew what Thomas needed. And Thomas responds by saying, you are my Lord and my God. What a fascinating picture of this thing. But hope was gone for him. I don't know where he was when the other disciples first saw Jesus. I think he was a little bit depressed. He's probably an introvert, had to process what was going on, and he was off by himself. But hope was gone for him. And I think we've all experienced where hope has been gone for us. Hope is, you know, maybe it's in a relationship, maybe it's in something else that's happened within our lives. Marriage is blowing up and you're like, where are you, God? Sickness hits and you're like, where are you, God? And hope is just like ripped away from us. And yet Peter describes Jesus as the living hope. And it's not just in a coming tense, it's in the present tense, which is a really interesting idea, interesting thought. And I think that's what happens with Thomas is Jesus shows up and he invites him back to the party of hope. And so what we thought we would do today is just tell you some stories of hope. Maybe you're in a place in your life where maybe you lost a loved one, you lost a child maybe, you lost a house, you lost a job, you lost a dream that you really wanted, and hope is not there. We want to just encourage you with, if you've said yes to Jesus, that he will never leave you or forsake you. He will be there with you. He is the living hope. And we want to just tell you a few stories from our own personal life. And Travis, you want to start with a personal story that you have?
Yeah, I think I could go and speak on all of those things. I've found myself hopeless in quite a few of those scenarios that you played out, whether it's parenting, whether it's marriage, whether it's just life. And for me, I mean, I've shared a little bit of this story on previous podcasts, but for me, college was a really hard time of just trying to figure out who I was as a person in my faith walk, especially. And so I think we all come to those points where we have those moments in our lives where we're like, do I really believe this? I've grown up this way, or my parents have shown me this route. Do I really believe it? And for me in high school, I was decent at football. And so that was my thing. I was like, I'm going to college. I'm going to play football. I'm going to do that. I wasn't that good, unfortunately. So I found a Division III school down in Wisconsin. I was a bigger school than I probably should have tried to play football at. But one of the coaches there, I got a chance to meet with him after doing some summer camps and stuff, and they were slightly interested at best. They're like, yeah, you can come and try out. Well, then there was a big coaching change and new regime came in and they wanted to do things their way. And so a lot of the guys that were recruited for that were kind of put by the wayside for the new squad to come in. And so that was a little bit disheartening. But as the summer progressed, I continued training and stuff. And unfortunately, my body was also not up to the task that I wanted to put it through. And so I was one of those injury prone kind of guys. And so a week before camp starts, I tore up my knee again and found out I needed to have surgery. So I'm bumming about that. I'm trying to call the coach and getting no return phone calls. Finally, the day that practice started, I got a hold of them and they were like, yeah, if you're hurt, we don't want you. And so I was pretty low at that point, but I was like, man, I'm going to come back. I'm just going to work my tail off on my own. Next season, that'll be for me. So school that year was hard as a freshman. There was some personal stuff in there. I had a grandmother that passed away from cancer. That was a whole other side of this story. But I ended up getting hurt the next fall too, so I couldn't go out. Finally, third year, I'm like, I'm in it. I'm going. I make it to training camp. We make it through the first week, which is just horrible. It's 40 hours plus. I mean, from sunup to sundown, you know, you're working out, you're eating with the team, you're watching film till 10:30 at night, learning the playbook. One of the last days before the season starts, we're doing this drill, and I break my thumb. Well, I made it for two other days through practice, and finally somebody noticed that I wasn't using my right hand to do anything anymore, and they're like, you got to go to see the trainer. I'm like, no, I'm not going to see the trainer. If I go see the trainer, they're going to tell me to go to the doctor. If I see the doctor, they're going to tell me, yeah, something's up. So I had an avulsion fracture, and the ligament had tore off a chunk of the bone in my thumb. There's not much you can do. That's a pretty serious deal because oftentimes surgery is required to repair it. So they catch me. I end up going. I get put in a cast for 8 weeks, and they're just like, I'm walking back to the locker room after that with one of the coaches, and I'm like, what do you want me to do? Because the season's not that long. Play like 6 games, 8 games, something like that. And he's like, well, honestly, like, we're not going to keep anybody that's injured. So that was the moment that I knew it was time for me to hang up my cleats. And after that, man, I turned my stuff in, cleaned up my locker, and I was just really low. But as I had time to reflect and just sit, and I was still going to church and stuff, but I was not what you would say following.
Didn't your girlfriend break up with you too?
Yeah, that
dog
was.
Died, yep, truck dog broke died. Down. Country song.
Got evicted from my house. I was living behind a dumpster. But so I mean, like, I was just thinking, I was like, God, you know, I've put all this in, this work in, this effort in, and I thought this was going to be my platform to actually use to speak to people on. And God was like, no, you're an idiot. I wasn't using that as a platform for my faith or to encourage anybody else along or share it even. I know, you know, I had my verse written on my shoes and that was about it. Like I was a stand-up guy comparative to some of the other guys on the team, but it was hard. And so I went through this kind of dark time, and I really felt like I had no hope. I had put my identity as an athlete and my workload that I could do, whether it was lifting weights or speed training and just trying and trying and trying to get better, it was all for nothing. It's like how Paul talks about, like, there's some value in, you know, training for an athlete, but it's really where you're walking with Jesus. Where's your heart at in that thing? That's where you need to invest in. And so, I mean, I felt hopeless. I was down. I was depressed. I went and saw a counselor at school in that time. And what really pushed me back towards Jesus was I was going to church, and I found a guy that was a mentor in my life, a good pastor friend. And he just kind of helped me along and was like, this isn't your identity. God's got something greater for you than just athletic accolades. And so I ended up getting more involved. I started leading a middle school youth group because I fit in with those guys really well, and did the summer camp counselor thing. And that was really a turning point in my life to live out my faith in a real way of like, okay, I believed in God, but I didn't walk with God closely. He was like my magic genie bottle that I could rub when I needed something, and I'd go to him in prayer. Yeah, my
Nate, don't sing it.
Oh, I almost did.
He's got the dance moves down. But it brought me back to this place where I had hope again in life. There was something greater, something bigger than myself to live for.
What's interesting about that, I think, is that Jesus didn't show up and audibly talk to you or any of those things. And in the story of Thomas, he said, blessed are those who do not see me but yet believe. There is that connection point of those who are connected to him, not by seeing his resurrected body. And I think the other thing that's interesting is it was through God's people. For those of you who are out there going, I don't need church, I got God alone, you need God's people because mm-hmm. you see the full counsel of who God is in that.
One of the tremendous verses in that for me came out of Hebrews 11. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance in what we do not see. And I was like, God, I can't see you, but I've put my hope in this sport of football. I've put my hope in what my body physically can do as far as lifting and running, but I needed that faith component. I needed Jesus. And that's really a turning point for me where hope was restored. It wasn't immediate, but it was a gradual path back to where God was calling me to.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I think, you know, a couple of thoughts on just that is, one is that you're restored through the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important concept that, and then the other part of it is that we put our hope in lots of different things. For mm-hmm. you, it was sports. And yet, really, our real hope lies in a person. His name is Jesus.
Jesus alone.
Yep. So, Nate, how about you?
So I have a fun personal story, but I was kind of little and kind of a child at the time, and yet God definitely did an amazing work. But I think the thing that had the even a greater impact in my life was my relationship with my brother. From my earliest memories, my brother was always like, I don't want to say like necessarily mean to me, but always teasing me, always trying to get at me or whatever.
You're an easy target.
So we're like your brother is what you're saying.
Sort of. And so I've developed a shell against it now and a force field. So thanks, guys.
God was preparing you for us.
But like just an example, when my cousin would come over, my brother, my cousin would just like tease me and stuff until I got so angry. Like all I wanted to do was like get a hold of them and like rip them into pieces because I couldn't because I'm like – 4 or 2 years younger than them. And, you know, I did actually look up to my brother too, because he did lots of things I wish I could have. And he seemed so much smarter because he was older. And so it was a very frustrating situation. And so we never really had this close relationship. And then when my brother turned about 13, he really went off the deep end and he started experimenting with different things like huffing and found like marijuana and really went hard into the drug scene and alcohol, and pretty sure he was an alcoholic before he graduated high school. And so in that we saw my brother's anger and rage, and he absolutely hated God. And in my own life, as this was happening, my faith was growing and developing, and I had put my trust in God and really saw him work in my life as I was following after him and participating in church and serving and all that stuff. And so as I would think about my brother and the tension, the heartache with that relationship, because I did desire to have a good relationship with my brother, but he was mean and like a devil to me in so many ways. One of the stories that really stood out to me and changed my heart towards my brother in some ways was the parable of the prodigal son. As I reviewed that story, I saw myself as the older brother, which was weird because my older brother, he was supposed to be the good one. I was supposed to be the prodigal, but it was the opposite. And so as God convicted me in that, I was like, man, I need to pray for my brother. He hates God. He wants nothing to do with God, and his life is horrible. He spent time in jail. He lived in just squalor for many years at a time, and he was selling his blood as a means of, you know, just providing for himself. And he was really, really struggling. And so I just started asking God to change my heart towards my brother instead of kind of almost celebrating the fact that he was getting what he deserved. And as my heart changed and as I was praying for him, there wasn't a lot of hope. Whenever I tried to talk to my brother about spiritual things, his anger was just overwhelming. And I remember one time we kind of got into a scuffle, a little wrestling match, and he pinned me down to the ground. I looked up into his eyes and it was like I was looking into the deepest, darkest black hole, just this emptiness peering into his soul, and there was just a vacuum there. And I think at that moment, it really hit me like, wow, my brother just needs God. My mom and I would pray for him constantly and never saw really any change until one day my brother came to both me and my mom, and he's like, I think I need God. Like, what? This is what we've been praying for years at this point. And he talked to us about this experience that he had on LSD. he took a bad trip, and he's like, it's like God just talked to me and like explained everything in the world. And so as he started like exploring this, his faith was really young, and he, you know, still had lots of rough edges, but we just tried to come alongside him and pray for him and really send him off to different people, because he wasn't necessarily able to hear from us, which is fine. But as he kind of grew and developed and we saw his life change, it was such an encouraging thing. And we were reminded, through God, through Jesus, there is always hope. No one can go too far away. And so one of the tragedies of the story, though, is as my brother's life was really transforming, and he was really becoming a responsible citizen and an adult and married and taking care of his adopted son, he passed away suddenly. And that was also really hard, because we're like, God, you have brought him from this like cold, angry, atheistic person to loving you, to pursuing you, to really taking responsibility and doing wonderful things and having his own family. And now you're just going to take him home? And so as we were thinking, wondering like, God, what are you doing? One of the things that I saw from that is, you know, sometimes when you lose a child, that can destroy a marriage. And I saw my parents' marriage actually get even stronger and their spiritual growth deepen. And as I, you know, kind of thought through some of that, I just remembered, you know, ultimately my hope and my desire to have this really good relationship with my brother that I desired throughout my entire life, I will be able to have that one day in heaven. And so, yeah, that's kind of my story.
Yeah, I think that's a great story of hope, because God was inviting you into the hope of realizing that he has the power to change and mm-hmm. change you in the sense mm-hmm. of your heart towards your brother, and also change your brother who was far from him in other ways. So that's a good story. My story spans a 10-year period, and I'll shorten this up, but we got a phone call, my wife and I, that one of her friends from high school had passed away. She had passed away through a drug overdose, an intentional drug overdose. That is sad news. And I just really, for my mind, I couldn't get my mind around, how can you become so hopeless that you would take your own life? I just couldn't get it. And yet we were asked to take her young son, which my wife was the godmother of this young man. He is a 10-year-old boy. The hard part of that whole story was his mom thought it would be a good idea for him not to be here on earth either. So he woke up with a lot of drugs in his system and seeing his mom passed away. How do you deal with that? I didn't know what I was doing. Still don't know what I was doing in that situation. But I couldn't wrap my arms around the hopelessness that she must have felt in that situation. Fast forward 10 years for me, my wife and I have 3 kids, all of them are 3 and under. We have 1 on the way. She's diagnosed with cancer. She's diagnosed with cancer, and it's not, it's a 50-50 shot that she's going to live past 5 years. As a spouse, when somebody's in that, your spouse, you're watching your spouse, you know, you don't want to show that there's emotion on your end of like, I'm scared too. You're just kind of trying to walk through that with them. And I was just struggling with that. I also, at the same time, my stomach was horrible. Like, they didn't know what was wrong with me. So I went to the doctor and they said, hey, we have to send you to a specialist. And so, you know, of course, what do you do in that moment? You start looking, you Google it. And, you know,
bad idea.
Dr. Levi figured out he had colon cancer.
It's always cancer.
So I'm freaking out right now, right? Like, I, you know, my wife, I don't know if she's going to be around. I don't know if I'm going to be around. And the pressure of all of that, I was driving in the car and I remember I started to get crazy thoughts. Only one swerve away. And you guys know me. I'm rarely suicidal, often homicidal. But those thoughts started to run through my head. And I don't think my wife even knows this to this day, that those were running through my head. I just got to get out of here. Like, it was so much pressure. And so I was supposed to go to the doctor next day, and I was so convinced that I had colon cancer, and I was going to die, and she was going to die, and we're going to leave these four kids, and just incredible amount of pressure. And I remember the sun was setting. We were in Minnesota, and you could see the sun setting, and I just went, God, I don't know what to do. I don't want to be here. And I'm driving across the road. I get back, and I drive into the driveway, and like, there is like serious hopelessness in my heart. And I walk in the door, and I know, I take a deep breath before I walk in, because I know I cannot show that emotion. And I say to my wife, how are you doing? And she said, it was a rough morning for me, not like sickness wise, just emotionally. And she said, but then I started to think, my biggest fear is the boys are going to forget me, but it's only for a short moment. And then we'll see each other again. That truth that she spoke, she doesn't know this. I never told her this story. So you listeners are getting a crazy story that my wife doesn't even know. She did not know the words that she spoke into my heart, the truth that God is always with us. He's never going to leave us. He's never going to forsake us. And that truth in my heart, she's sitting there with a actual diagnosis of 50-50 chance of survival. I'm, you know, the Google gods told me I have colon cancer. And I'm like, okay, I can go do this. So I'll finish up that story with just this, like, it was like Jesus himself, in that moment she spoke those words, was speaking like it was me being Thomas at that moment. It was me going, oh, I can stick my hand in your side. I can see your wounds. Because how did she know that that's what I needed to hear? And how did it, like, it's only God, right? And so to my wife is fine. She's 8 years removed from cancer. Praise the Lord for that. I went into the doctors and they said, you have IBS. And it's stressing.
There's something wrong with you. But
yeah, there's something wrong with you. You have IBS. That's probably more than you all wanted to know about me, but it was stress induced. And so to this day, if I get really stressed, that's what happens to me. But I just remember that moment all the way back to 10 years before. That hopelessness that this woman must have felt, that she just didn't have this living hope of Jesus. And Jesus showed up in my life in such a way that I could go, okay, I can take the next step. And it's only for a little while, whatever that may be. And it happened to work out for us in the sense that we're prolonged here on this earth. But even if it hadn't, those words were so powerful in my life that for you listeners out there, I just want to say Jesus is alive. He is well. He's with us, and place your trust in him. And so that's good news you can use on Pearls and Swine. We love you guys. We want you to know Jesus. We wouldn't tell you that if we didn't believe it in our hearts and have stories to tell you about that. So come on out, hang out with us sometime. And if you have any questions, you can email Travis at evangelup.org.